You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
You're listening to Smashed from The Ensemblist, the only podcast that shows you Broadway from the inside out. I'm Aaron Albano.
And I'm Mo Brady.
Welcome back, listeners, to our tongue-in-cheek recap of what is still the Broadway community's favorite TV show, Smash. Yes, we're talking about the NBC series that aired from 2012 to 2013.
Smash was also an incredible glimpse into the theater community in the early 2010s, as many of the show's writers, actors, and dancers were played by real Broadway performers with real Broadway cred.
But we wanted to go back in time to see how the show has weathered. What it got right, and what it got very, very wrong.
So let's dive in and talk about Season 1, Episode 2, The Callback. Aaron, give us the stats.
Don't mind if I do, Mo. Episode 2 is titled The Callback, and it premiered on February 13th, 2012.
Happy Valentine's Day.
All right. It was written by Teresa Rebeck and directed by Michael Mayer, both of whom also wrote and directed the pilot. Viewership took a big dip in the second episode. It was viewed by 8.06 million people, which was 26% down from the pilot episode.
So we loved the pilot, but 3 million people did not.
I guess, right? There were four featured songs, two original by Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, and two covers. The two originals were a different version of Let Me Be Your Star from the previous episode, and a new song called The 20th Century Fox Mambo. And what happens in the episode, Mo?
Well, the episode begins with the Bombshell creative team mulling over whether they are hashtag Team Ivy or hashtag Team Karen. Tom and Julia are playing with the show's structure, moving songs around as director Derek takes Karen and Ivy through dance auditions. However, Tom tells Ivy, I would have just given it to you.
Yes, he does.
Karen stays late for a work session, missing an important business dinner of her boyfriend's, Dev. Ivy takes the challenge of competition for the role head-on, reading biographies, watching movies, practicing Marilyn's lip placement, and eventually having sex with the director.
There we go.
In the final auditions, Karen performs a full staged version of 20th Century Fox Mambo, surrounded by ensemblists, which Derek justifies by telling Eileen, Tom, and Julia, oh guys, the song was just so good that we went ahead and staged the whole thing. So we have these two women pitted against each other. Karen is green, but she is certainly trained. Ivy is completely spontaneous and sexy. Ivy comes out on top. As the orchestra swells, she cries, but Eileen and Derek agree to keep their eye on Karen Cartwright. Also, Dev works at City Hall, and Julia pursues adopting a baby from China that her son Leo wants, but her husband Frank doesn't, but nobody cares.
In this factory where dreams can come true, are you ready to make someone new? You're the thing that must teach me to do the 20th century Fox Mambo.
So in the second episode, we have this work session for Karen. She's learning some of the choreography, right? And she's learning with four dancers, yes?
Yes, yeah. And who, because I knew Philip Spaeth, Eleanor Scott, Ricky Tripp, but I didn't know who the last one was.
Oh, it's Christine Covello.
Oh, okay. She was fantastic. I mean, they were all fantastic. Right. But I didn't know her.
No, she lasted on The Town was her last Broadway gig.
Oh, nice.
And I think she's a new mom. We also got to see the women in the dream sequence.
Oh, my God.
That's sort of the opening of the show.
Like the opening where they're kind of brainstorming what that would look like.
Right.
First off, that section of the show, when they introduced that as the opening, I was like, I could be on board with this opening of the show. Who was in there? It was Katie Webber, Savannah Weiss, Jess Golden. And then the two?
Yes.
Yeah.
The one thing I thought was like Savannah is stage left and she's like in a pose with one leg out or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that would be a really uncomfortable pose to be in take after take. When you're on stage and you're doing a tableau, you're like, oh, this is, you want to pick something that your body can do kind of like 8 times a week for however long you need to do it.
Yeah.
But when you're doing something on set, it's like, I just need to pick something that I can do for 6 hours today.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What I think is interesting is that we're seeing the same dancers over and over again.
Oh, for sure.
Now, part of that is obviously just the production of Smash has these people in their back pocket. They mm-hmm. they know their phone numbers. They know whose agents to call. Right.
Yeah.
But what's cool from sort of a meta point is we are building an ensemble.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's definitely like a subconscious nod to the way this business works. These people are Derek's people, and that he's going to carry with the show from beginning through if he trusts them.
All right.
All right. How'd you like this episode, Mo?
It's our very first time in the Smash rehearsal room, which I love. I love that Smash rehearsal room. That feels iconic to me. I love the fake background.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like we're somewhere on like 25th Street looking north between 5th and 6th Avenues to the Empire State Building.
Work.
You never clocked that?
No, not at all.
Oh, yeah. Fun fact about that rehearsal room, mm-hmm. that big window is fake.
Yeah.
But the window that is to the right of the mirrors is real.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I was never in that yeah. room, so I had no idea.
I rehearsed and was held in that room a lot because literally next to that room was the black box theater that Hitlist used in Act 2.
Oh.
All right.
See, because I knew all of this was just like in
sound stages. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting ahead of ourselves. I love being in the rehearsal room. And I loved the work session that Karen has. I thought that was fun.
Full work session.
Right.
A full just Maryland boot camp.
Explain what a boot camp is.
So a boot camp, if you heard from previous episodes of The Ensemblist, basically like a week-long faux audition where you learn multiple numbers from shows.
I remember Tracy boot camp.
Yeah, for Jersey Boys boot camp.
Yeah.
And Hamilton boot camp.
Hamilton boot camp.
And...
But those you get paid for.
Yes. This was not.
Yes.
Anyone got paid nowhere.
No.
Eileen was not writing any checks to anyone.
Well,
this
she
time.
Doesn't have any money, as we find out later.
It's all in escrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Favorite moments of it
yeah.
are when Derek yells into the phone, "We'll get back to you, Bernie," as a nod to Bernie Telsey, okay, but never Bernie. Gets explained. Like,
no.
There's your inside.
The insiders, completely.
Yes.
Well, the insiders are rampant. And Joe Mahoda, a shout out.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Bernie.
Cameo by Jordan Roth. Pre-fashionista Jordan
yes.
Roth. This is shaved head
uh-huh.
version of Jordan Roth. They're in old Bond 45.
Yeah, I was like, they're in Bond 45.
Oh,
Tom Kitt
Tom
at the
Kitt?
End. Yes, Tom Kitt, like hosting the duplex or something.
Yeah, exactly. Who is the composer of Next to Normal?
And yeah.
like quite, he's probably not hosting at the duplex.
No, not even a little bit.
We also got our very first drink to the face count. Which
yes.
I feel like was like a thing that Smash ended up becoming known for. Eileen throws a drink
oh, yeah.
into Jerry's face.
And it became iconic.
Yes.
I wrote first martini! Exclamation point. Yeah.
Other favorite moments of the episode?
Well, we got into this last episode, but let's continue on Tom's relationship with Ivy. Because it really takes a spike where I'm just like, what is your relationship with Ivy? I wrote, Tom's investment in Ivy borders on inappropriate. The way they're arguing about who is more appropriate, Team Ivy or Team Karen,
mm-hmm.
there is no objectivity there whatsoever.
Oh, sure.
Completely not. Which, there is a level of, like, being in someone's corner. But there's another one where you're just, she's the person and that's all.
Is that because people like Tom and Derek are archetypes? Because we just don't have enough time in an hour-long television episode to, like, let Tom go on a journey to, like, be in Karen's court and then come back and be in Ivy's court.
I don't think so. Even from the pilot, and granted, be inspired by your friend Ivy, who recorded your first demo. But now you're in production.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to find the best person for the job.
Right.
And being completely resistant to all the points that Derek and Eileen are making and Julia are making very strongly about how, as ugly as we ensemblists find this idea, is that, yes, pure talent does not sell a show.
Star quality is different than ensemble talent.
Yeah. I mean, and whether Ivy has that or not, them putting up Scarlett Johansson, them suggesting these other names that could very well do the role, they just haven't seen them yet,
mm-hmm.
Tom is completely resistant to. Tom is like, Ivy or no one. Like, and I'm just like, that's...
That's not how you get a show produced.
Yeah, and I'm just like, we're casting right now, bro. Like, you need to see all these people and keep an open mind. When he says, you know, I would have just given it to you, that's great. But also, like, if you're as close to this woman as you know, as we know you are, you know how she'll...
React. Yeah.
And respond. And...
She's,
like, enabling that behavior.
She's an extra woman.
Yeah. And I'm just like,
can we call her Extra Ivy from now on?
Extra Ivy. Perfect. Yeah. Hashtag okay. Extra Ivy. And even at the end, when he goes out of his way to come to the theater, which is very sweet and very nice, but also I'm just like, you are lifting her up to have a massive fall. It's not the smartest. Like, you can be for her all you want, but like, there is a level of professionalism that is not being observed in their relationship, at least the one that we see on the show.
I want to ask about another Albano fact check.
Oh, okay.
This director hates this composer.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
I don't know. I actually, like, I've, even from the pilot, I was like, has there been any iconic director-composer animosity in the history of Broadway?
Well, it seems like bad producing that you would bring together two people who
just
aren't going to collaborate with
each other. Yeah, exactly. I mean, because there is a level of both of them are fantastic, but at some point, the chemistry, just like it needs to be on stage, it needs to be backstage too.
Right.
And if there's no chemistry within this creative team, then it's just going to be toxic when they're developing the show, and that's going to carry on stage. But again, but that's
especially if it's her first time going out producing on her own. Why would she go with this person? It seems like you'd go with a safe room.
Well, I mean, or people who will be, the thing that pings in my head is the Hamilton creative team. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all brilliant on their own, but because they have such a close friendship and such a collaborative energy within them, Tommy Kail, Lynn, Andy, and Alex all feed off of each other, A, because they like each other, B, because they trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to achieve that kind of brilliance with people who hate each other.
One of the things I love about these beginning episodes is that we're able to meet Philip Spaeth and Savannah Wise.
Yeah.
Right? These are two actors at this point who are Broadway ensemblists, like mm-hmm. have ensemble cred, and are really getting a chance to shine.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing their relationship, and it feels like very authentic to me when we see Megan and Philip and Savannah walking down 44th Street, right, with like posters of "On a Clear Day You Can See Forever" mm-hmm. and "Anything Goes" and "Sister Act." You're like, this is literally a conversation, you know, when they're holding their Starbucks coffees uh-huh. and they're like
walking to their stage door.
Yeah, like that is so authentic and so true.
Yeah.
Both Philip and Savannah do a fantastic job of like sort of coming in when they're needed, giving some reality to the situation, feeling like they're authentically part of a Broadway ensemble, mm-hmm. and then stepping back into the background.
Yeah.
Yes. What I don't love about this episode is that I feel like this is where we start getting off the rails about what it means to be an ensemble performer.
Oh, completely. I call it chorus shaming.
Chorus shaming.
Yes. It was I think this is the episode where we start getting into that.
Oh, sure. We get a quote where it's classic. You put in 10 years in the chorus and Karen just shows up.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not how it works.
I was like, no.
Theater is not a ladder that you climb up.
Exactly.
And because there's like 22-year-olds making their Broadway debuts every single month
mm-hmm.
in every single show.
Yeah.
Right? Like, also, there are people who are great ensemble actors who don't play leads. Like, the one is not requisite of the other. It's sort of that star quality thing. Just because you're a great ensemble actor doesn't mean that you are a Broadway star. Those are two different skill sets. Mm-hmm. They can overlap, and some people do both.
Yeah.
But
this hierarchy that was seen both inside and outside the industry was really augmented by this show.
Right.
Really ground my gears mm-hmm. for a long time. I wrote, the first sign of chorus bashing was the Ivy, Dennis, and Jessica scene, where Ivy refers to her own track as a demented duck. Like, there's some self-loathing of what you're doing.
But we've also been in Broadway ensembles where someone in it hates it.
Yeah.
Right? There's like, I have a very specific memory of someone in the Addams Family Ensemble who never seemed grateful to be there. And I was like, you are literally on Broadway right now.
Yeah.
There are 5 men in this ensemble and you are one of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Why are you so angry?
Oh my gosh. And it's a perspective. And I think it gets worse as the show progresses.
Because,
mm-hmm. but it really promoted this idea that you better be the star of the show or nothing.
Right.
Because ensemble members are lower than low.
Right. And if Ivy didn't get this job, then what would it all have been for?
Yeah. And I'm just like, no. As someone who loves being in their ensemble, having done all the other positions in this business, I'm like, it is a perfectly respectful and...
Some people think that way. Some people backstage do talk that way, would call their track a demented duck.
Yeah. And maybe at this point in the show, it was showing the authenticity of some of those people in our business.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
But
we never saw the other side of it. No one else, Dennis or Jessica or anyone else, is being like, I like being in the ensemble. Yeah. This is good.
There was no other perspective. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the show created this
myth. Another myth in this episode, I think, is the idea that playing a lead is only about paying your dues, or getting ahead in this business is only about paying your dues. If you do enough work in the ensemble, if you do enough work, then you can start getting bigger roles.
It's a perspective on the business that, because this show was built for people to look into our industry.
Right.
It was not like a pathos that should have been promoted.
Right, but you think about creating a television show and pathos of an ensemble actor's career is probably not something you're thinking about.
Yeah. But then promoting this idea then leads to ensemble members being shunned at the stage door in favor of being the only signatures that fans want.
Well, now, like, all you have to do is get an Instagram presence and then people want your signature, Aaron.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I guess you should work on that.
I guess I should. This couldn't run forever, so.
Albano fact check number two.
Okay.
Have you ever had a composer come backstage after opening and kiki with you in the dressing room after a show?
No.
No. Why has that never happened? Because after a show, you're literally trying to get out of the building as fast as possible.
Yeah.
I will never forget at Addams Family, there was an actor that his goal was to get out of the building before the music ended. we come out, we bow, we finish bowing, the curtain comes down, the orchestra plays for like 90 more seconds, right? Mm-hmm. As people start milling out and exiting. This actor would literally get out of the building in 90 seconds.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
People want to go home.
Oh, yeah, for
That's
sure.
It's like 11.
Yeah. And those are local trains now, girl.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Literally.
Now knowing.
Inwood's not going to come to you.
Mm-mm.
With Tom Levitt going to go kiki, this is where I'm like, what is your relationship with these people?
Right.
Which composers can be, this is not saying that composers can't be friends with your ensemble or like other actors in this business. Like, that's not what I'm saying at all. But it's this weird, like, inappropriate closeness that, while on a friendship level, is perfectly fine, when the lines are blurred in a professional setting, it can get very dangerous for the actor. And that's...
Especially if it's someone who's proven to be so volatile.
Yeah. And that's where
it doesn't feel like a composer would be kikiing. They may kiki with an actor, but it wouldn't be somebody that rips off their wig.
Exactly. And that's where I'm just like, Tom, you're not looking out for the well-being of Ivy by doing all of this. And that's where I was like, and this is where I got to the end of it. I was like,
pages are turning, notes are being written.
This is where I was like, okay, what is Smash actually about? Because this is when I got into that, like, okay, thematically, what is this show about? Because watching Tom treat Ivy this way, knowing who she is and knowing, I was like, is this show about dreams? Is this show about legacy? Is this show, or is it about like approval or acceptance or validation?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's where I'm just like, Tom, are you chasing this validation from Ivy almost more so
than he wants the success of the show?
Yeah.
Interesting. Is Smash a melodrama?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Do I think it was as much of a melodrama as it could have been? No. Mm-hmm. But
again, like this show.
This show was about feeding the fire. The reason that Ellis is there is to feed the fire of drama.
Okay. Yeah.
You wouldn't do that in creating a show because you'd be trying to make as little drama as possible.
Yes.
Save the drama for the stage.
Yes.
But
Ivy is chasing the approval of her mom, of Derek, of Tom and Julia. Like, is this what's driving her and these expectations that she's, like, she's just chasing this validation and almost the one with the most healthy perspective on all of it is Karen, and we watch her pulled away from the health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was
The show is telling us that the Broadway veterans are right. But when we look back and we look at their motivations and why they're doing what we're doing,
yeah,
Karen feels like she has a much better head on her shoulders.
Yeah. Hollywood will be under my thumb. I'll change partners until I become it.
The 20th Century Fox. All right. Special thanks to Aaron Albano for joining us for this miniseries. You can learn more about him and how to connect with him online by visiting our website, theensemblist.com.
To stay up to date with our discussion, be sure to watch episode 3, Enter Mr. DiMaggio.
Ooh.
Either on NBC.com or on the NBC app before our next episode.
And The Ensemblist was produced today by me, Mo Brady.
Please help others find out about The Ensemblist by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
I love making you say this. It's fantastic.
You can also download episodes wherever you get your podcasts or at theensemblist.com.
You hear that, Broadway Sid? He's mine now.
Ah! They're going to be so mad.
Follow The Ensemblist on Instagram to see the latest posts from our website, where we share the stories of talented artists working in Broadway ensembles. Thanks for listening, guys.
Until next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.